Good morning. It's great to be here, and I'm really happy to be able to talk to you this morning about our effort in Baltimore to reduce asthma disparities following the Seattle King County model. And this is a replication effort. I'll be sharing some of the outcomes that we have with you on the program. So first of all, I have nothing to disclose in terms of financial relationships. The asthma disparities in Baltimore are very well known for a long time. Asthma prevalence in Baltimore is twice the national average. It's much higher in our city school children. The asthma disparity rates for ED visits and hospitalization are also huge, with black compared to white, more than twice as high for blacks. We also have large disparities across Maryland in every county for which we have data. And here you can see there's a couple counties we don't have data by race ethnicity, but you can see in red the asthma ED rates in 2010 compared to the gray where the asthma rates for white. And in every single county, there's huge disparities. In addition to the asthma disparities, Baltimore has many children living in poverty, and smoking is very high among city residents, especially among residents with low income. We have very old housing. More than half of the housing was built before 1950. Much of it is row housing, like you saw on the first slide. It's in fairly poor condition, estimated 24%, or about a quarter, with leaky roofs, sort of a basic housing quality measure. In addition, there are large percentages of homes with infestation of rodents and also cockroaches, particularly compared to Seattle King County area. So in 2008, we were awarded funds from the CDC to translate the Seattle King County model in Baltimore. We decided to do a public health program because we did not have the infrastructure to do a clinical trial. And we wanted to see how this would work as a public health program. The city also had been using outreach workers for their lead and other and healthy homes programs, so we thought it was a very good fit for the program there. So our target population was school children in the Baltimore City Public Schools, age 4 to 18, with moderate to severe asthma. And these are our goals, very similar to the goals for most of the asthma programs around the country. So reducing symptoms, use of urgent health services, triggers in the home, and improving knowledge, communication, and particularly provider knowledge. There hadn't been a lot of effort previously in Baltimore to really work with providers, and we didn't have the same linkages in place as Seattle did. In addition, we had six specific adaptations based on Baltimore's unique conditions that the health department was aware of. We would recruit through the schools to try to reach the highest risk children. We would screen for and address lead hazards found in the home, because lead hazards are a big problem in Baltimore, very well known. We also wanted to screen for and address caregiver depression, already had been identified in other studies in Baltimore. We wanted to make sure people were linked to care. We knew the problem with rodents. We also have one of the highest rates of fire and death from fire in the country, so we wanted to improve injury prevention, particularly smoke detectors and carbon monoxide detectors, and the vast majority of housing here has gas as heating and cooking, which is a problem with carbon monoxide. We also wanted to try to address the smoking problem by motivational interviewing. So our program was six home visits over a six-month period with a one-year follow-up. These were the kinds of things that our visits were focused on. We collected data initially, and at about 1 year later at our follow-up visit, we used the interview and home environmental assessment forms that were developed in Seattle King County, and we just pretty much used them exactly the same, except for the modifications that I told you about. We also collected information on each visit on an encounter form that covered this information. And these encounter forms were sent by fax or email to the child's medical providers after each home visit so we could communicate with them what we were finding, because we found many, many problems, including people not having medications in the home, not filling prescriptions, not knowing how to take medications, et cetera, et cetera. So this is our recruitment retention numbers. We had a lot more referrals than we did interviews, and by the time we got to some of the referrals, the phone numbers were dead and we were unable to actually contact people. Among the people we contacted, there were about 500 eligible and interested. We enrolled 236 and completed baseline interview for 236. We also completed the baseline environmental form 479. After the first visit, we were unable to get back into a number of homes, and that's a problem with the high-risk families we were serving in terms of wanting to have people back in for long periods of time. Both of these visits were quite long. And then we completed the program and one-year visit for 128 families. So this is a little bit to show you the difference in demographics between Baltimore families and Seattle King County. As you can see, the average age was a little bit higher. We still had a higher percent of male. The majority, vast majority of children in our program were African American compared to, a wide range of race, ethnicity in Seattle. Our family size was also 4.4, and two members on average in each family had asthma. So we could consider some of the things we were doing would affect more than just the child that we had enrolled in our program. In terms of education, I think this is education of caregivers, very similar to Seattle with the exception that we had a fewer percent of college graduates. Still the vast majority of people renting. We had a little bit higher pediatric asthma caregiver quality of life score, which I think is probably reflective of the time period since we started collecting, we started making visits in 2009 to 2011. So it's a big difference in time, about 10 years between the time of Seattle data collection. We had more pets in the home. These were over 50% indicated that they had roaches on the last 3 months, and 67% with rodents, and that's mice, mostly mice. We had some with rats as well, and then a higher percentage of caregiver smoking, so many more environmental concerns. Asthma symptoms, and this is in the last 14 days, very typical measures. Again, compared to Seattle, they were better, but I think still not good compared to other areas in the country. Now, what did we find? What were we successful in doing? Asthma action plans were a focus of our program. And as you can see here, we were successful in increasing the number of asthma action plans that families had in their home. And this was through work with healthcare providers. We still didn't get an asthma action plan in every home, despite numerous efforts. So this remains a problem, even with a program like this. But this translates out to a much larger increase in the number of families who said their schools had asthma action plans, almost 50%, which we think is very protective for the kids and other caregivers as well. In addition, we have a threefold increase here in the percentage of caregivers saying that they're using the plan, which I think is also very good because in terms of management, you want to have them putting these tools to use. We also provided spacers, and we saw an increase in the use of spacers most or all of the time in terms of medication. With the peak flow meters, it was the same thing. We gave out peak flow meters. We taught the families how to use them, and we saw an increase in peak flow meters, increase in use of peak flow meters, and I think very important, an increase in the use of a system for changing medications when the child got sick. The families reported that the child's asthma was better. Over three-quarters of them, it was better than in the last year than the year before. This is compared to what we started with at baseline. And only 3.2% said their child's asthma was worse. So we think this is a good indication of success. On the pediatric asthma caregiver quality of life score, we computed it two ways. Juniper's score is really for children aged 7 to 17. So we looked at our whole population, which included children younger and a little older by the time we finished the program, and for children who were 7 to 17 only, at initial and follow-up visits. So in both of these ways of calculating, we showed significant improvement in the pediatric asthma caregiver quality of life of 1 point, which is half a point of significant change. So we were very pleased at that. We did see some changes in some of the environmental exposures, and this is by self-report. The number of pets in the home didn't change, and I think that's unlikely to change. It didn't change in Seattle, King County. But we did see a decrease in the families that reported cockroaches in the last 3 months, mice and rats. In the smoking, we saw no change in terms of cigarettes or days per day or days smoked per month, but we did appear to see a change in where people were smoking inside the house. So we did work on that as well. So we saw an increase in the families that said they rarely or never smoked inside, and a decrease in the families who always or mostly smoked inside. So we're not completely happy with this, but we feel there's at least a movement in the right direction. In addition to this one score of have you seen pets in the last 3 months, we also did a room-by-room evaluation, which is part of the Seattle King County. So we have calculated a score for pests in the home for both cockroaches and mice. And the cockroach score is based on the presence of cockroaches, live cockroaches, and the presence of frass in three rooms. So a total score, if you had neither in all three rooms, it would be 0. If you had both in three rooms, it would be 6. So our mean score for the 128 homes for which we have data started out at 1.26 and ended at 0.65. So we felt this shows a good change in the cockroach infestation in homes. Similarly for mice, we had a slightly different score. Mice were present. The families had seen mice. We saw droppings, and we saw holes where the mice could be present. So we have a total of 9 if you had all three in all three rooms. So our average score starting out was 2.89, which is close to 3. And the mean score at the end was 1.32. We also calculated the total number of mice reported per room. The number of mice in the three rooms on average started at 3.39 and ended at 1.93. So we had a lot of families with a lot of mouse infestation, even though it was improved. The rats, we had up to 4 rats seen in one home. So this, we did see a decrease in the rats, but we had so few rats that we couldn't really get statistical significance. On the provider communication, this is a score. I think there are, let's see, I think there are 9 measures. And so there's a total score, 9 items. It rates from none of the time to all of the time. And sort of goes like the provider treated you with respect, the provider listened to you, they explained so you could understand. And so at baseline, there's an improvement from baseline to follow-up on all measures and an improvement in the total score, which we felt was very good. It's highly statistically significant at less than 0.0001. And we had very good internal reliability on both of the scores. And this is the Seattle King County measure. We also looked at self-efficacy. This was 12 measures. And this is the percent saying that they were very sure they knew how to do things. And this also increased. And you can see at the beginning how low the self-efficacy of these families was, that in the beginning that less than half knew that they could keep their child's asthma under control. 28% said they could keep their child from wheezing or coughing. So this, I think, really indicates real problems in this area in inner-city populations. So we calculated a score. We did this differently from Seattle King County. So a decrease in score actually means that it improved. So we have to rescore this and recalculate it. But we showed a significant improvement over the course of the program, which we're pleased. With caregiver depression, we asked 2 screening questions. Have you been bothered by very little interest, and have you been bothered by feeling down? And our goal was to try to, if they were both positive, then we referred the caregiver for assessment and follow-up. And we provided access to resources, so we did check, but we didn't follow through to find out whether or not they went for care. But we did reassess this again at the follow-up visit. And what we found was small but statistically significant decreases in the average scores across the group. But what was most interesting, and you can't see it on this slide, but when we did see changes in both directions. So people went from having no depressive symptoms on this two-item scale to having one or two. But for the families that had both yes for both measures, 50% of them by the end of the study had both no's. And for the families that had one yes, 70% had both no's at the end. So we felt that we perhaps had given families some hope and some reason to be, you know, less depressed about their situation. We certainly did not see big changes in what was going on within the neighborhoods in Baltimore. These are our changes in symptoms, and you can see again we had statistically significant changes in everything except for the use of controller meds, and although they increased, it wasn't statistically significant. And part of this, I think, is towards the end of the study, we had people that were taking more medication than less. But earlier in the study, when we looked at this, we had more of a statistically significant change. But I think over time, the use of controller meds has improved. We also, the decrease in reported hospitalizations was also statistically significant. Now, we've used this data on the hospitalizations and ED visits to try to look at some of the cost measures for this kind of a program. And we calculated the number of self-reported hospital stays and ED visits at baseline and at follow-up. And using data from the Maryland Medicaid Administration, we calculated average hospitalization and ED visits in Baltimore. And so we're using an average value for looking at these visits. So you can see that there was, on average, one visit less in the ED for everyone in our group, and 0.22 visits less on hospitalization from the initial to follow-up visit. We looked at our program costs, and this is made up of three components: our supplies and equipment, very typical to what most programs have, our annual overhead costs, and our personnel costs, which is most of the cost. We had a scheduling visit coordinator. We had home health workers, on average about 30 hours to complete the six visits. And we had an RN supervisor who also worked on each case. So there's a lot of time involved in the delivery of services and the oversight of those services. So in terms of our cost savings analysis, what we're looking at is cost averted by this very simple measure of $272,000 or $2,200 per child. Our home visiting costs $170,000 or about $1,400 per child. So a potential cost savings for third-party payers of $831 per child, which says to us that this kind of a service would be very helpful and could save money. And we think that's an important way in which to try to get these services delivered in the future. So now what? We have used the grant is done. We've finished the work. There is no funding at this point for this kind of program in Baltimore, as is the case in most places. So our next steps, we are in the middle of an evaluation using matched Medicaid data. We have an organization that does all the Medicaid analysis in Maryland, and they've set up a matched control for our population, and we're looking at the actual ED visits and hospitalizations that did occur as reported into Medicaid, and so we can get a better estimate of outcomes, both a year before these families were enrolled and a year after. That's the basis on which we're doing that, and that we should have that by the end of the year. We also expect to do additional analysis looking at intensity of interventions, but the number of home visits were completed, the environmental exposures, which we now have some interesting measures, and our ability to reduce triggers. We've also begun to establish this as a best practice on the State Health Improvement Plan's website. They have a website showcasing best practices so other people can learn. But we're very, very concerned about the need for further replication. And so we have begun meeting with stakeholders to talk about the results and encourage that this be replicated and funding be found for this. There is no way that we can get Medicaid to fund this as a direct service, but we have met with the State Health Department. We were participated in public health grand rounds at Johns Hopkins in June. We're meeting with managed care organizations next month. And we see other options potentially being this kind of service being picked up by the federally qualified health center, part of the patient-centered medical home. We're not really sure, but I think this is the big question for all of us, is we know this works. Clearly it worked in Baltimore. Clearly it worked in Seattle, King County. Every other replication that I've seen report on, it's worked. So we know these kinds of programs work. How are we going to get them funded, and how are we going to ensure that this kind of public health delivery can continue? So the community level interventions that we're talking about here and community level services, I think, are really important for improving health outcomes of at-risk populations. I think they provide higher value, they lower disparities, and they lower cost. And I think we need to figure out effective ways to get them funded. So thank you for our study, our three primary community health workers, our referral coordinator, our two nurse program managers, data managers, co-investigators from Hopkins, who are very helpful in helping us think through and figure out how we're going to begin this work, our research analysts from University of Maryland, and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention for funding us. Thank you.